You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay first aired on May 18, 1984.
Hi, I'm John Weeks, and this is The Nature of Things, a program about the world we live in, presented by FM 90 and the Rice Creek Field Station, a unit of the State University College at Oswego. John Burroughs had a way of conferring poesy on a host of things which many of his contemporaries had never seen as poetic. Witness the transformation which the name Wake Robin can work on a plant commonly known to the pre-Burroughs world as Stinking Benjamin, or the similar benefits of substituting trout lily for adder's tongue. If I possessed a bit of Burroughs' gift, I would like to engender some appreciation for the scrub apple, pear, and thorn bush. The natural fruit produced by these old derelicts doesn't have much value to commerce and evokes mostly curses from homeowners whose lawns they litter. But to the wild community, from field mouse to deer, they have a golden quality. Likewise, the gnarled trunk and branches, replete with cracks and cavities, are homestead territory for flickers, wrens, downy woodpeckers, or in the good old days, bluebirds. Such welcome natives are often displaced by starling or house sparrow, but those alien invasions can't be blamed on the apple trees. Since the apple concentrates on breadth, not height, in its development, it produces a grand complex of nest sites for robins, waxwings, kingbirds, doves, warblers, and finches. In the densely overgrown apple copse, one may even find those lovers of the deeper thicket, the catbird, brown thrasher, or cuckoo at home. Without straining the imagination too much, we can find ample benefits bestowed by apples for wildlife in every season, even winter, when deer devour the buds and rabbits and field mice gourmandize the bark and twigs. Today, it's the vernal apple tree that I'd like to lionize. The blooms of cherry, plum, and shad add delightful splashes of white to the otherwise still drab woodland edge, but the apple, waiting as it does for the first warm spell in May, has a life about it beside which the aforementioned beauties pale. I find much delight in the interplay of color as those beautifully feathered sprites, the warblers, weave in and out among the branches. Childhood memories of a Blackburnian warbler or an oriole posing prettily in that lovely bower have not been significantly dimmed by the passage of time. I had a favorite apple tree at the Rogers Center at Sherburn, where every spring our dedicated band of bird watchers could share the delight of the warbler apple blossom combination. The tree bloomed profusely, and every year dozens of nosegays were extemporaneously composed by people who found its lowest branches just irresistible. In summer, its branches served the nesting birds, at least a dozen species during my 8 years there. What a lifetime bird list that tree must have had. Youngsters also climbed through those ample boughs. In fall, its fruits provided delightful pies and sauces. Patriarch trees have the advantage over us as witnesses of history. They concentrate on one spot. My Sherburn apple tree was not older than a man, but it had occupied its spot during just the right span of years. In its developing youth, cheese factory employees enjoyed their lunch breaks in its shade. Later, when the cheese factory was converted into a game farm, its blossoming corresponded with the first hatches of pheasants each year. It witnessed the crating and shipping of hundreds of thousands of young pheasants over the years. Next, the tree stood passively through the transformation from game farm to conservation education center, and then, just as its golden age utility seemed assured, it was cut to the ground. My successor at the center did not share my satisfaction with age-old apple trees. Its removal was said to be a safety measure, but I remember too well the complaints of the maintenance staff about raking up those apples each year to put much faith in that explanation. Seems more likely that despite its annual contribution of bloom and palatable fruit, its career was ended to save a few hours raking. I have observed that budget dollars speak much louder than warblers or honeybees. Wild voices are seldom heard without the helpful amplification which a sympathetic human advocate can provide. When the advocate left, so did the tree. To each his own. If you are the possessor of a golden-aged apple tree, typically gnarled and disreputable, I hope you will consider all these things, its heritage, its hospitality, and its lovely fruitfulness before you decide it has to go. Well, that's all for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.